Hey everyone, it's Drew. We have a new type of episode for you today on the podcast. It's an Ask Me Anything episode. We're calling it Ask Drew. If you ever want to hear my thoughts about a whole nuanced group of topics, this is the episode for you. A lot of people don't know, in addition to being a podcast host, I have been a successful entrepreneur for many years now. That's actually probably what I'm most known for in my community. Built, started, and sold companies for multi-million dollars. And so I give some career advice, especially for those people who are thinking about becoming a wellness or a health coach. I have a lot to say on that. I also share my thoughts on vaccines. It's a controversial topic, and really my underlining message is, with the COVID vaccine being so new, if somebody has concerns around it, and largely I think it'll be safe for most people. I've been vaccinated. You know, when I have kids in the future, I'm sure I'll follow and get vaccines for them, but I'll do it in a way that is within the guidelines and sort of lens of functional and integrative medicine. You know, in functional and integrative medicine, when it comes to the topic of vaccines, they are not anti-vaccine. They have questions about some vaccines and the ingredients inside. It's called vaccine safety. My business partner, Dr. Hyman, who often says it best, he says, you know, just because I'm for airline safety and airplane safety doesn't mean I'm anti-airlines. So I think there are some early concerns, and I mentioned them in the podcast, about some of the data out of Norway when it comes to the elderly population and their reaction to vaccine. And just recently, you know, I have parents who are above the age of 70, and San Diego just the other day said, we're gonna pause on the vaccines and administering them to especially the older population because of the number of reactions. Again, largely I believe that the vaccines will be safe for healthy people. But again, to add that as a caveat, COVID is largely okay for healthy young people. So am I rushing to get the vaccine? No, I'm lucky in a way, quote unquote, that the vaccine rollout has taken time and there's not enough dosages for everyone. And I'm not really super worried about getting COVID. I'm being super safe and making sure that I'm not spreading COVID in case if I do get it to people, but I'm not rushing to get the vaccine. That's my own personal viewpoint. Remember, I am not a doctor. I'm not qualified as an individual who's an expert. I just synthesize information and I interview experts that are out there. So it's okay for me to have an opinion on the topic. And that's what today's podcast is. It's my opinion. Work with your doctor to balance it and figure it out for you. And that's my vaccine disclaimer, especially because vaccines are so polarizing of a topic. You're either for them or you're against them. Nobody wants to be nuanced and take a nuanced approach. Okay, that being said, let's jump into today's episode, which is Ask Me Anything. Here we go. Awesome. All right, what's up, everyone? This is Drew Perrott here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. We're doing an Ask Me Anything series. Hopefully it's a regular one. If I get good questions and I give better answers on my side, you guys will be the judge of that. So we have a few folks here that are teed up to ask a question. First of all, super appreciate it, especially as our inaugural Ask Me Anything. I'm going to pass it over to Patrick from our team, who's going to bring in the first guest, and we'll jump right into things. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Drew. It's good to be here.
Thank you for being here, man. Tell me a little bit about yourself before we jump into your question. Where do you live and how'd you find out about the podcast?
I'm from Cortez, Colorado. I'm a therapist at an agency here, and currently at work doing a supervision thing, which I'll return to right after this.
Amazing.
I've been listening to your podcast for about a few months. I'm not sure where I heard from it from. I think from someone else at a gym, actually, that they recommended you, and I've
word of mouth liked it ever since.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Oh, I was just saying the best type of marketing, word of mouth, you know, hearing about it from somewhere else. And one more question before you ask your question. What do you specialize in as a therapist?
I am an addictions counselor, but I also went to the school called Naropa, so transpersonal counseling psychology, kind of Buddhist bend on therapy.
You want to give your clinic a shout out if anybody's looking for, you know, somebody in that sort of world?
I'm actually not sure if I could, since I
okay,
it's not
got
my
it.
Agency. So,
no worries. Let's jump into your question.
Sure. So, someone So the question that I have is, what is your favorite question to ask? And the reason why this comes up is I'm a big fan of finding better questions to ask. And so when I say, like, what is your favorite question to ask? I mean, either yourself or other people or people you interview. I know it's a pretty vague question.
I got a great answer for you.
Excellent.
So, like a lot of things in life, the way I think about it is, what's the opposite? What's not my favorite question to ask? So whether it's in an interview, whether it's one-on-one when I'm catching up with a close friend or somebody that I'm meeting that's new, I really despise the question, what's new? You see somebody that you haven't talked to in a little while and you're catching up with them, what's new? And here's the reason why that I despise that question. I'll get into some of my favorite questions. I really don't like the question, what's new, because it sort of puts the burden and the onus on the value is what's new. And anytime you ask a standard question that is like a typical question, and if anybody who's a parent, I'm not, but you know, I have nephew and nieces. If you want to get a kid to check out, when they come home from school, the first question you ask them, how was school, right? Like, okay, maybe that works a little bit when they're really young. As they get older, they sort of feel like that's a standard question that all parents ask, especially when they're not really paying attention. They just want to engage with the kid. So my favorite questions are anything when you're actually present to the conversation. So what I love to do in interviews and catching up with people is I'm just thinking, how do I get this person to open up on something that maybe they haven't talked about before? If I ask them an out of the can question that they're used to getting on every single other interview or that they've heard 10 other times today, I'm going to get the standard cliche type of responses. Instead, it doesn't really matter what the question is, but let me just open up with something that's a little bit more present to what's going on. So a couple of those that I might ask is, hey, you know, no matter how big or small, like, what's something that made you smile today? What's a highlight, right? Or, hey, we haven't seen each other in a couple of weeks. You know, who's somebody that did something interesting for you? I love opening up with interesting questions that get people out of their normal story that they're running through the day with and actually present in the conversation.
That's awesome. I'm going to use that question. What is it that made you smile even a little bit today?
Yeah.
That's a really good question. Smile.
You know, what's something you're grateful for, you know, today? And it doesn't have to be forced. If you see that somebody's not in a good mood and you come in with that, they sort of feel like, okay, maybe you're not picking up on the vibes that they have at the moment. It could even be just, how are you doing? But asked in a heartfelt way that allows for it to open up. I think with health, with conversation, with relationship, with all aspects of life, I'm all about, you know, breaking out of the normal game plan. The game plan always works until it doesn't. And that goes with questions too. Be present, see what you need or what the other person needs in that moment, and then ask away. Great question, Mark.
Thank you.
All right, Mark threw me a softball. Let's see what else we have on the docket. I'm going to pass it back over to Patrick to bring over our next individual. Hey, Alicia.
Hey, Drew. How are you?
I love the setup. That's like a fancy green screen. Are you a gamer or like a professional YouTuber?
I wish I was one of those. No, I own a speech therapy business. So I work with kids with disabilities, and I just launched a new company for professional development.
Okay, amazing. Do you want to give a shout out to your website or social media if people want to check you out?
I would, but I am a little embarrassed because I've been in business 20 years and I've never marketed. And so I'm working on that. But my business is called Dynamic Therapy Solutions. We're in the Valley in Chatsworth and in Palmdale. And we're also virtual. And then the new company is Educate 4. So anybody who needs CEUs for occupational therapists or speech pathologists, we have cheap CEUs and we do lots of fun online presentations.
Amazing. Great. Well, we'll link you up in the show notes. What's your question? Would love to hear it.
Oh, my question. I can't wait for an answer is, how do you make the choice between plant-based versus animal protein? And sorry, I just wanted to add on is that
please.
I, I did go plant-based for about 2 months and I felt amazing. I was able to run faster. And there's this little loop where I live in Ventura, California, and I was able to finally run that without being tired. It was amazing, but I didn't lose weight. And I felt really, really challenged when I would go to dinner or eat out or order in.
Yeah. So I feel like I have some interesting thoughts on this because I grew up vegetarian. I was vegetarian my first all the way up until 18. And around 18, 19, I actually became a vegan. And I mostly did it because I went to a lecture here in LA. I was visiting some family and I went to a conference. And it was the first time that I heard somebody say that there could be a connection between dairy and acne. And I had really, really, really bad acne all over my face and terrible skin all throughout high school. Had a lot of security about it. And I was looking for anything. If somebody told me drinking motor oil would have fixed it, I would have done anything. That probably would have killed me. And obviously don't do that. But I'm just saying I was open to anything at all. So I went vegan and I was vegan then for a long time. And the first few years were amazing. They call it sort of like anytime you do any diet that is not the processed food diet, you know, I don't know what you were eating beforehand, but anytime you get off of more processed foods, whether it's vegan, keto, carnivore, anything you do, you're immediately going to feel better. And I saw the impact. In 2 months, my skin cleared up. And I really found that dairy, even though I didn't have, wasn't lactose intolerant, I had a sensitivity towards dairy. Then I noticed that around the 4 or 5 year mark, and I even went even a little bit more extreme, I was into like the whole raw food diet and that whole movement, if you're familiar with that. And I didn't do all raw foods, but mostly my diet was raw foods. So what I noticed is that I started seeing diminishing returns. The first thing that I noticed is that around the 4 year mark, I had a lot of gut issues. I would normally, as I was already vegetarian, so I had a lot of gut issues when I would have responsiveness to eating a lot of lentils and other things, which I grew up, you know, eating, but just getting off of dairy, my gut improved. But then when I was more vegan and eating a lot of these vegan processed foods that I was having, I was still having a lot of sensitivity to grains and lentils and beans. Then I got introduced to the world of functional medicine. I thought for the first time, let me get my laboratory work done. Let me look at actually what I'm missing and what I feel like I need in my diet. I started experimenting by including fish first. So I started including fish and I immediately noticed that this dip that I saw around the 6 year mark, 4 to 6 year mark of being vegan, I felt like I got my mental clarity back and I got my energy back. And I started to notice that the less that I was eating beans, grains, and other things, the less digestive issues that I was having. But when I was vegan, you couldn't have convinced me not to be vegan. I didn't want to hear from anybody. I was convinced and I knew why I was doing it. So I think the thing is, I will answer your question in two parts. Number one, you often do see this vegan honeymoon, just like with any other diet when you first do it. Then pay attention to the following things. Pay attention to digestion, pay attention to your brain power. And then when it comes to the question of weight loss, what we're really learning, and you've probably seen, we've done a couple episodes on the Broken Brain podcast with Dr. Casey Means and Dr. Ben Bickman, is that it's less about, with weight loss, it's less about vegan or eating meat or not eating meat or pescatarian, because you can do any of them the wrong way. And it's more about getting your blood sugar under control, metabolic syndrome. Weight loss is highly linked to that. So there's a couple ways to do that. One, you can start researching which foods you're eating on a regular basis, continuously spike your blood glucose, which ultimately, if you're doing that all the time, that long-term can lead to insulin resistance. And that's what those two episodes, people can find them in the show notes, are all about. And so you want to break out of that and you don't want to continuously spike that glucose. If you can afford it, it's a little pricey, but there are companies that are out there like Levels that have a continuous glucose monitor. I tell people wear it for a month. It's like $300. It's pricey, but see firsthand what foods spike your glucose and work on maintaining a balanced, you know, more balanced glucose throughout the day. And that ultimately is going to support you in the weight loss process. And the rest is just trial and error, right? Trial and error and trying things. I feel great now that I'm not vegan, but I still eat just as much plant food as I did last time. I just have these targeted proteins that I've included inside of my diet.
Awesome. Did you say that Levels is the company for the glucose monitor? Because I've been watching you and listening on the podcast, and I really think that that is my challenge. I think most of my family's diabetic. I've been checked, I'm not, but I think I'm kind of that borderline, and I'm someone who craves sweets a lot. And fortunately, I have been back on protein now for the past 7 days, and I've lost 6 pounds. So doing the same thing that you've just said, but I don't know. I guess that's why I asked the question, as I was still feeling like I'm still not sure if I made the right choice to go back to protein. So thank you so much.
Yeah. And it's going to be experimentation. And also too, I mean, this goes without saying, but most importantly is how you feel, because weight loss can be very subjective, right? If you're active, if you're working out, everybody has a different vision of what weight they think they should be. So go based primarily on how you feel. But again, belly fat is one of the first indicators that somebody doesn't have a healthy metabolic, like optimal metabolic health. And that doesn't mean that you're on your way to diabetes. It just means that you might start paying attention to even the healthy foods. When I started wearing Levels, I saw that, wow, I love, you know, Siete, right? The company. They make incredible like tortillas and other stuff, and I'm still a huge fan. But I would sometimes have like 6 of their tortillas. And when I saw my continuous glucose monitor, that spiked my blood sugar more than anything else I was having. So I still enjoy those, but I might only have 2 of those wraps if I'm having like Taco Tuesday or whatever else it is. There's all these things, even healthy foods that we eat throughout the week, that spike our glucose, and that can lead to these repercussions, which can make it difficult to lose weight if that is somebody's goal. So we'll link to that in the show notes. But yeah, there's a company called Levels, and you can check them out.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you. You helped me a lot with my trigeminal neuralgia. So thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear. So happy to hear. Thanks, Alicia, for the questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Patrick, next person up. Okay, great. All right, you're going to have to pronounce my name. I looked it up beforehand. I thought it was Vidijana.
It's Viridiana.
Viridiana.
It depends where you are in the world. I live in the Bronx, so a lot of people say Viridiana.
Okay, got it. Well, I want to say it proper, so I'm going to work on it.
Yeah. So it's like Diana, but you say Vidi first. So Viridiana.
Viridiana. Boom. Got it. Do you have a question that you want to jump into?
Yeah, so I've been oil pulling on and off for a few years, but not consistently until I went to the dentist a year ago, and they found a ridiculous amount of cavities. It was like 7 of them. I was like, oh my God, and I hate drilling. And I recently listened to your podcast about root canals, and I was like, I definitely don't want a root canal. So that was last year when I heard about my cavities, and I decided to oil pull more aggressively. And then recently when I went back to the doctor, they found less cavities than I had before. And I was like, whoa, this is weird. Like, is this all in my head, or is there like something actually behind this whole oil pulling thing? Because I did notice my teeth were definitely getting whiter, but I'm like, every few months I sit down and I try to do research on oil pulling, because I'm like, okay, is this all in my head? Like, what are the benefits of this? Is there any like scientific backings behind this oil pulling, or am I just wasting my time the day in the morning with oil swishing in my mouth? And also, what type of oil matter?
Yeah, for sure. Great questions. So I've read pretty deep into this, and I'm, you know, coming from India and with like my family's background in Ayurveda, that's really where originally oil pulling. And for those that are listening that have never heard of it, oil pulling is basically this mechanism where often you would take coconut oil. Sometimes in India, they might take sunflower oil, cold press. You would fill your mouth up and you'd let the oil sit there for, you know, there's different protocols, but 3 to 5 minutes. And the idea is that the oils are pulling some toxins from the mouth and from the teeth that's there. So I've researched it over the years, and there are randomized controlled trials on oil pulling. They're small. They're very small. And there's only a few, but there are randomized controlled trials. There's a great review from a gentleman who's at a dental college that I read a couple years ago in India. I believe his name was Vagash Kumar. I'll link to it in the show notes, where he covers the research that's out there for oil pulling. Now, the thing about oil pulling, like a lot of trends that are there, it started really blowing up when the internet blew up and people were claiming that oil pulling can remove heavy metals from your mouth and other aspects. And there's only a little bit of research on this, but there is some research. And the research that is there is primarily on halitosis, which is bad breath. And it's also on bacterial concentrations that are in the mouth, which we know that some of those bacteria could be associated with particular strains. If you've heard our interview with Dr. Stephen Lin, that might make it more your mouth more susceptible to getting cavities. Now, that being said, all the dentists that I look up to who are the true experts in this space, I'm just kind of pulling from different resources and trying to share what I've found. The dentist that you mentioned, Dr. Rosita Roshian, who talked about root canals, and also the other dentist that I mentioned who's been on the podcast, Dr. Stephen Lin, who also has a great summary on oil pulling. Oil pulling is not their primary way to shore up and beef up the health of your teeth. The first thing that they want you to do, and this again depends on the type of diet that you're eating, they want to make sure that you're eating and including some of the elements that come from an ancestral diet. So Weston A. Price, who was a big researcher and dentist in this space, basically went around the world and started looking at modern day hunter-gatherer societies. This was in like the 50s, I believe. And he saw that these people who didn't have access to dental health, didn't have dentists, never went to the dentist before, they had perfect teeth. Their teeth were white. They were big, beautiful smiles. They weren't crooked. They didn't get cavities. And he was wondering, why is that? And one of the things that he found is that their diet played a huge element in it. And it seems to be that fat-soluble vitamins that you get from having things like, again, this all depends on your diet and what you eat, things like cod liver oil, in some cases, people including organ meat inside the diet, is very important to include those elements inside of there, because healthy teeth are built from the inside out. And it's less about pulling the toxins out, and it's more about beefing up your teeth from the inside out with the right and proper diet. Now, that being said, there's no real, from everything that I've read about oil pulling, there's not a lot that's out there showing the cons, right? You're just putting coconut oil is what most people now recommend. You're putting coconut oil. If you're using any other oil like sunflower oil, it has to be cold pressed. You want to stay from any oil that's expeller pressed, because those have hexane, you know, gases and all sorts of stuff. But I don't think there's any risk to including an oil pulling. It's basically moderately helpful to harmless, but I don't think it's the best thing that people can do for their health. The best thing is find a biological dentist, somebody who's really trained on what actually helps the teeth be supportive. Get the mercury out of your teeth if you have mercury amalgam fillings, but you got to do that with a trained dentist who knows how to do it the right way, with a gas mask on you so you don't breathe in the mercury. And additionally on that, if there's anybody that's grinding their teeth at night, that's the number one thing that long-term is going to lead to you having a root canal from all the dentists that have been on our podcast. So dietary elements, oil pulling is not bad. There's a small amount of evidence that's out there, some small randomized controlled trials that are there. So no harm, but make sure to look into some of these other aspects that I mentioned.
Thank you so much.
I hope that's helpful. I think I cut off for a second, but I hope that's helpful. Those are some good resources for you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Great question. All right, Patrick, let's jump into the next question.
Hi, Drew.
Hey, hi.
Good to see ya. Thanks for taking my question today.
Absolutely. Thanks for patiently waiting. I know I've gone a little bit longer with these first two questions, but thank you for patiently waiting.
Not a problem. I've got a long question for you too. So there's probably a couple different parts to go along in it. So I'll just go ahead and ask it. First of all, thanks a lot for soliciting our feedback from all the listeners. I really appreciate this. So I'm in a crossroads with my career. With all that my family and I have experienced and learned from our own health journeys, I would love to pursue a career in health coaching, nutrition, or a clinical space to help teach others how they can improve their health, feel empowered, and to, you know, make changes to feel better. However, with all this COVID going on, I'm skeptical about the vaccine until more data has become available. And also too, just concerned, are we really being fed the right information? Are, you know, with there's just being such a strong push to inoculate the population, I would suspect that mandates will impact our clinicians on the front lines, essentially putting a pause and possibly stopping from pursuing my career aspirations. This is frustrating watching this unfold. I work in the pharma industry and have learned so much about the diseases and understanding the needs of the patient, but would like to support patients with wellness than necessarily medication management. So what would your advice be with this?
Yeah, I'm going to divide up that question into two. And I'm going to divide it up by first saying, big picture, more and more is coming out about the vaccine every day. And both in the way of, you know, if we are truly looking at the vaccine objectively, we want to make sure we don't discount anything that is considered typically bad, right? Like bad news about the vaccine. And we also don't want to discount anything that is good news about the vaccine. So the early trials on the vaccine were showing that there was, most people had moderate to minimal short-term side effects. We haven't studied the vaccine for long-term. That's not something that's been really set up for. And the vaccine trials are not designed to do that because they're going to be unblinded soon is basically the plan. And I'll get back to that in a second. But like a lot of the balanced researchers who I look up to are saying, we need more information. We need more information. Just this morning, Norway, it's all over the news. You know, people probably see it by the time this podcast come out. Norway was the first country to come out and say, hey, it seems that Norway inoculated a population set of about 25,000 people. There were 24 deaths that they investigated for individuals that were elderly population. Most of them were 80 years or older, where they came out with a strong statement today. And again, this is Norway, a very progressive country. They said that individuals who are frail should avoid the vaccine because it seems that these 24 deaths are linked. This is not me. I'm not a vaccine skeptic. I've been vaccinated in my life. If I have kids, I don't have them in the future. I don't have them now, but in the future, I will follow a modified vaccine schedule with the consultation of a functional medicine doctor looking at the individual immune health of my own child to make sure we do it in a smart way that makes sense. So I'm not a vaccine skeptic. I want everybody to know that. And I want to make sure that everybody looks at the information objectively, just like anything that we put out there. We rushed in an amazing way, like, great, you know, billions of dollars spent. These pharmaceutical companies rushed in a positive way to get, you know, the presidents who were really pushing for it and the population exactly a drug. And if you look at the tech behind the drug, it's very interesting the way that they've solved it. But we need to continue to get more information that's there. So big picture, I think we're starting to see a lot more balanced approach of, great, here's the population set, you know, seems to be that if you are healthy and if you're young and healthy, you know, the vaccine is not going to make that much of a, you know, the side effects are mostly minimal and going to be short term. But along with that, you have to balance it out with your doctors, you know, your own relationship with your doctor, because against COVID, if you're young and healthy, is also not really an issue for most young and healthy individuals. So the people that really need to be considering and looking at some of the latest data, and there's some great resources that are out there that we'll link to in the show notes, are individuals above the age of probably 70 and 80 who previously, you know, the government is really pushing and saying that those are the first people that should be inoculated after healthcare workers. So do your research, talk to your doctor, don't let anybody bully you or rush you. It's okay to take your time and really go through the information, especially because developments are coming out every single day. So that's on the vaccine side. On the side of your career change in health coaching, the first thing I'd say is this: state mandates and whatever's happening with the, you know, vaccines or not, that really shouldn't really have anything to do with your career choices, because here's the thing, more and more opportunities that are coming for health coaches and functional medicine offices and practitioners is all telehealth. Everybody's working from home anyway. I know the clinic that I'm part of with Dr. Mark Hyman, the Ultra Wellness Center, everybody's working from home, and most states are going to encourage people to work from home for a while, just while we work through, you know, everything that we're going through in the COVID pandemic that's there. So I would continue to pursue it. The one thing that I'd say with a caveat, and I tell this to anybody who's considering to be a health coach, there is a huge supply of health coaches because a lot of companies have learned that they can make a lot of money selling certifications for health coaches.
Right.
Some of those certifications are good and some of those are mediocre, in my opinion. I think two of the best ones that are out there is Functional Medicine Coaching Academy, because there's the way that they teach. And also Chris Kresser has the ADAPT program for coaches. I have no financial stake in either. Now, the thing that I always tell people is that there's not a bunch of health coach jobs that are waiting for you on the other end where people are just waiting to hire every health coach that's available. So you are more likely to get a health coaching job if you take your current skill sets that you have in your current job. Let's say you're in pharma right now. So what are the skill sets that you're in? Is it sales? Is it sort of marketing? Is it project management? And then combine that with your health coaching and then go to these clinics or these companies that are hiring. You know, I'm an investor in a company like Parsley Health, which is a, you know, a bunch of clinics that are there. They're often hiring health coaches, and pitch yourself not just as a health coach, but as somebody who has these other skill sets, even if it's from your other former career that's there. Where I see people truly get tripped up is that I'm not going to name any names, but there's some health coaching companies that are out there that will promise you that they will teach you how to be in business for yourself. And 95% of people that go into business for themselves for health coaching don't make any money, you know, they don't make enough money to pay their bills, and it's too hard. And they honestly don't have the training to be a good health coach yet. You got to work with a team. And so my recommendation is don't go into business on your own, go work with a team and combine your health coaching passion with your previous skill sets and pitch yourself like that to the company. That's the best way. We have a ton of health coaches that work for my companies that I have with Dr. Mark Hyman. And the ones that we've hired are the ones that are the best at something else besides health coaching. They're a great writer. They're great at marketing. They're good at sales. They understand social media. That's what you want to do to beef up your resume. And don't worry too much about what the states are doing. And don't get too distracted by, you know, what's happening with the inoculation, separate from your own information that you need to make your decisions, and go full on for your career and pave a new life for yourself.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Yeah, I have looked into the IFM health coaching, as well as a couple other, you know, businesses out there. But yeah, kind of feeling skeptical, like where's the credibility behind the program, and, you know, being able to gather that knowledge and make it useful and taking the skill sets that I have today and applying it interchangeably. So I was on the same path, Drew.
Great. Well, Lynn, I wish you the best. And
okay, thank you.
Keep me posted.
Thank you.
All right.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Okay, let's go to the next individual. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Drew.
How are you?
I'm good.
Tell me a little bit about yourself before we jump into the question.
Let's see. Well, I'm a nurse. I'm a yoga teacher, and I work for a company that sells clean personal care products.
Oh, amazing. Do you want to mention them? Obviously, if you work with them, it's got to be good products. Do you want to give them a shout out?
It's awesome. They're the leader, really, in the clean beauty space. Their Beauty Counter is the name.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep, I've heard of them. Based in Los Angeles, I believe, right?
Santa Monica, actually.
Yeah. That's where I live, in Brentwood, but my office is in Santa Monica. So very cool.
Nice. Yeah. It's an awesome company. It's only 7 years old.
It's they've done really well.
Yeah.
Hats off to them.
Yes. Our CEO is pretty dynamic. If you ever want to interview somebody that's really a good talker, she's good.
Awesome. Well, I'll keep you posted. Thank you. We'll check her out.
Okay. My question is, this follows up closely to what Lynn was just asking, but I really want to know what you think of the vaccine and if you're going to get it.
Yeah. You know, people ask all the time, and I think that I tend to disappoint people on both sides because I have very nuanced thoughts about things. I'm not in one camp and I'm not in another. You know, my business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, he always says that he gets, I'll curse for a second, but he gets shit from both sides because
one side because he's for vaccine safety. And for a long time, he said, we need to get certain types of ingredients out of traditional vaccines. Again, I'm not talking about the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine for COVID, because there was some questionable ingredients in vaccines and he's for vaccine safety. He would often get, you know, put into the camp as a vaccine denier, and he's not. You know, again, he's been vaccinated. He talks about vaccines saving lives, you know, tetanus vaccine, especially for people that have the potential for that. So, you know, vaccines are as diverse, and the data behind them and the information is diverse. The challenge in the world that we live in today is that people want to put you in one camp or they want to put you in another. Now, luckily, and obviously you know a lot about this because you're a nurse, luckily, you know, individuals like yourself, luckily for me, I have time to wait and see what more information comes out about the vaccine. As I mentioned today, Norway coming out with their strong statement saying, again, not really affecting my population set, but the population set that is 75 and older, that they have some concerns about the vaccine that need to be investigated. That they're not saying, you know, everyone shouldn't get the vaccine, but they are saying that if you are frail, you should not get the vaccine. And this is unfolding. This just came out this morning. It's all over Twitter and the news and everything like that. I want to wait to read a little bit more of the report. So I imagine we'll get more nuanced information that comes out. My general rule of thumbs is that I think that vaccines get hyped up in terms of their controversy on a little bit of both sides. I don't know if the vaccine, in my own personal opinion, after interviewing, you know, Nobel Prize winners on this podcast, talking to people that I really look up to, heads of science, other stuff, I think that vaccine is one part of the approach when it comes to really making sure, not just for this pandemic, but for future pandemics, that our population is as healthy as possible. I think if you're young and you're healthy, vaccine isn't going to do anything. I'm not worried about the side effects. They're mild to moderate. And I think most people, I've had friends, you know, people that are doctors and nurses like yourself that are on Instagram that are sharing their experiences and letting other people know, like, look, nothing happened to me, you know, because you do have this extreme camp that is like, vaccines have microchips or vaccines are this or it's population control. I'm not in that camp and I don't believe those things. So I do think it's important for people to see information unfold and to look at it and to look at their unique population set. Where I think functional medicine has a unique opinion on vaccines that is interesting is this. So let's say Norway put out their recommendation that if individuals are frail, they should really reconsider or consider with more intelligence getting the vaccine, not just jump in. What they're saying is they're talking about a frail immune system. Now, in functional medicine, just because somebody is not diagnosed with a chronic disease doesn't mean that that individual may not be frail. There's a lot of things that people are working through, for instance, extreme sort of mold toxicity, or they might be suffering from Lyme. It may not be a traditional chronic disease in the camp of Western medicine. You know, Lyme doesn't really get a lot of attention in Western medicine. There might be patients that are better off talking to their doctor because they could have a slightly compromised immune system. And even separate from the COVID vaccine, there's a lot of functional medicine doctors that work with parents who are worried about their kids who have compromised guts or compromised immune systems, who they work for a more modified vaccine schedule for the traditional vaccines that they would get and be inoculated with as children. And that's a beautiful thing. We want doctors to make those decisions individually with families. Just because you are not sick with a chronic disease doesn't mean you might not be frail in that camp. So I'm looking forward to more information coming out. Luckily, they're firstly going to healthcare workers, as we know. It seems that all the states and the federal government is feeling that the whole thing is happening slower than it seems. And I will just gather more information. I'm not opposed to getting it, but I also know that I'm not going to get bad side effects, you know, knock on wood, but I'm also not really that worried about COVID as a whole. And then lastly, I'll end off with this. There's still some important questions that we need to know about the vaccine, which is, if you get the vaccine, can you still give COVID to someone else? That's a question that we don't know, right? Again, this is not coming from the vaccine skeptic camp. This is coming from genuine researchers and the company saying that this is something that we still have to study. The other component is that with vaccines, there's short-term side effects and there's long-term side effects. My hope, and really a lot of people, you know, really amazing professors. The British Journal of Medicine did a really great op-ed on this. They're advocating for the companies to really, if you really believe in the vaccines and you want to show the population that they're completely safe, right, which a lot of the data is showing that, they should not unblind the trials. For anybody that's not familiar with this, vaccine trials, typically it's considered unethical if you know that the vaccine data is good. If you have a placebo-controlled trial that's blinded, at the end of it, you always have the question of, should we unblind this and give the control group that didn't get the vaccine, should we give them the vaccines? And right now, the decision by the companies, because they don't feel it's ethical, they feel it's unethical not to give them the vaccines, they've said we are going to unblind them. But a lot of researchers are saying that we will lose good data of the long-term impact of this if we want to study it and just see if anything comes up. And so they're pushing the companies to keep these blinded. And it's a controversial thing. It's tough because if you really believe the vaccines work, you want to give it to those individuals who didn't get it after the trial is over. So wait, watch, and see. I don't think it's going to really be an issue except for very immunocompromised people. But that is the question, is are the folks who are elderly in that camp? So that's my personal opinion. It's nuanced. It's not black or white. I'm sure it's going to piss some people off, but that's how I feel about it.
Well, I had heard a functional medicine pediatrician talking about, and someone had asked her, and she said, there's no way in HELL that I would get that vaccine because it's never been given to humans before, a messenger RNA vaccine. So,
yeah. And you know, that's one opinion. And I also think for, especially as a pediatrician, we have not looked at, I don't remember the exact age, but I don't believe that there was anybody, I'll have to fact check and follow up in the show notes. We haven't tested this on kids, and also kids in general for COVID, we know this, they're not really, right? So it's population specific. They're not really at risk for COVID. And even if they get COVID, it's not severe, you know, 99% of the time. You have the one-off case studies where you say that a kid died or Kawasaki syndrome or other stuff, but look at the data and look at your population set. I am not jumping to get the vaccine, but I'm also not first in line to get the vaccine, and it's not going to come to me for a long time. But wait, watch, and see. I don't like bullying on either side. I don't want people to bully me into getting it. I don't want people to bully me into not getting it. But that doesn't mean you get your education from memes or even a podcast host who's not a doctor, which is me. Look at resources that are out there. We'll put a couple of really interesting ones, British Journal of Medicine. Then there's also a gentleman who's been sharing a decent amount of the data. He's very controversial, but he's a former New York Times journalist, award-winning journalist. His name is Alex Brennerson. I forgot exactly his last name. He's been gathering a lot of the data that's out there that helps people make the right decision for them. So different thoughts that are there. And it's a great question. And I think Dr. Mark Hyman, my business partner, has a podcast coming out soon on the vaccine where he's going to share his own thoughts too. So definitely tune into him. He's way more qualified. He's qualified. I'm not qualified to really speak on it.
Yeah, I love listening to him. I'm watching his docuseries right now.
Oh, awesome. Very cool. My sister directed that, by the way. She's great.
Your name in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you very much.
All right. All right. Let's jump into the next folk. Hi. Is that Diane? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can.
Hi. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. Good to see you. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you so much for sending me that. I was, I don't know how to see you on line, like live. I just listened to your podcast on 63, so I'm not very good on the computer, but
No worries. I can see you and hear you perfectly.
I love your voice. Oh no, I don't. Anyway, I take care of my 97-year-old parents here in Atherton, California, near San Francisco. And again, they're, my dad's 97 and my mom's 96, and it's hell. I'm a chiropractor that's injured. And I kind of had the same question as the gal. I came on late. I'm so sorry. I saw it and I do everything. My dad doesn't want anybody coming inside the house since the pandemic, even the house cleaner. So I do everything. I cook, I clean, I grocery shop, Then my son had a 5150 a few months ago, which was horrid. And I'm so stressed out. So thank God for people like you. And I hope they die soon, because when they're not happy, because all they do is whine. It's like when you get over 90, most people, if you can't do neuroplasticity, which is the only things I know that for sure are neuroplasticity from being a chiropractor, is work out hard that can show the brain actually enlarge. I don't know.
I'll just jump in real quick. I mean, the stress of being a caregiver is huge. I've been a caregiver before. My grandfather, who was suffering with really bad bone cancer and then started experiencing, you know, dementia, I moved back in with my parents. This was after I dropped out of college, one, to save money, but also number two, because they were both busy, to be a caretaker for my grandfather. It's stressful. It's challenging. You know, there's so many layers to it. And I just, my heart goes out to you, and it's tough. It's also tough for them, especially when you're older. I don't know what kind of, if they are experiencing any kind of, you know, dementia or any other sort of deterioration that's there, but it's so challenging because can you imagine being in your body and you don't really even know kind of where you are or what time you're in. So my heart goes out to them and my heart goes out to you.
Well, they're not that bad for their age, because my mom is 100% Greek, and she was always Hippocrates, your food is your medicine. She never drank. I think that's why I drank so much. I'm like, who cares? You know, I'm the middle child of four sisters, go figure. But they're not that bad. My dad was an athlete in college, and he was a tennis player up until 80. So that playing tennis, if you all know, I played in college, is that hardcore, you know, you're doing one point and then you go back. So it's high intensity, right? We do the 7-minute workout, if nothing else. And so he played tennis up until 85. So he still does all the bills and everything. So I think the exercise, which everybody already knows from listening to your podcast.
Huge role. Diane, I'm just going to jump in because you're cutting out a little bit here, and I want to make sure I get your question.
Well, yes, because I just joined your functional medicine from Mind Body Green, and I find it is so awesome. I just love it. And my question was, how do you start out? So like the gal that I'm trying to walk back down the driveway, if you walk backwards, it untorches your spine. But anyway, what I actually answered my own question by in the Mind Body Green. I think it's a great price for what you guys offer, being a chiropractor. I got $300 off. And at the end, they interview this Jess Cordine and JJ Virgin. And I can't remember the other one, but that Jess Cordine is just a doll. She's so sweet and motivating. I just love her. And I think the program is a great start for anybody. And I'm really happy with it. I just want to find out about the test. So I pass it my first time.
Yeah, and just for anybody who's not sure what you're talking about, I think you're talking about my business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman. He partnered up with Mind Body Green, and they came out with like a program, like an introduction to functional medicine. Yes. I don't have any involvement in that, but I am familiar with it. But it sounds like what you're asking, Diane, is like sort of what's the next step? How do you get started? Could you make that into a career? Is that what I'm hearing a little bit?
Right. But you kind of answered that already with the first gal. So you just said try to meld that. Like, I'm a chiropractor. I still see some of my friends and, you know, outside and right now. But
I'll jump in with one other answer, you know, again, just because I know we only have a little bit of time. If you are a chiropractor, again, Mind Body Green is great. And I think, you know, they have a great course. I don't think the course is robust enough for healthcare practitioners. So if you are a chiropractor, I would highly encourage you to go to the Institute of Functional Medicine and take their AFMCP course, which is the Introduction into Functional Medicine. It's really designed for practitioners. It's an accredited program that is evidence-based, taught by some of the greatest leaders in functional medicine. And really, Institute of Functional Medicine, created by, you know, a lot of people, but, you know, Dr. Jeffrey Bland was one of the godfathers.
Yep, I saw him years ago.
Doctors at our clinic at the Ultra Wellness Center that are on the faculty, Dr. Liz Boehm, and their level of teaching and knowledge is going to take you to a whole other level. It's a lot more robust. And then the other aspect is The thing that I didn't get a chance to mention to the woman earlier, I believe it was, I'm spacing on her name, but maybe it was Lynn. I think it was Lynn.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So the thing that I mentioned is connect with community. There are a lot of really incredible functional medicine practitioners. I'm going to give a couple people shout outs. So there is a couple really great ones in Toronto. One is Dr. Stephanie Estima. She's a really great functional medicine chiropractor. There is Shalini, Dr. Shalini Bhatt. She's been on the podcast before as well too. And if you go on Instagram or you go on Facebook or just reach out and start following these people, when you start to see what they're up to or what they're doing with their practice or the content they're putting out there as sort of influencers in the community, you'll start getting more ideas of what you could do. You know, right. We have to, there's a gentleman named Gary Vaynerchuk who talks a lot about social media and other stuff. I've been following his career for a long time. One of the best pieces of advice that I see him giving to individuals who want to expand in this space is that he says, you got to go taste. When you don't know what food you like, you have to go try a bunch of different foods and then see, okay, I like pickles. I'd like hamburger. I don't like this. I want that. I don't want that. And the best way to do that in developing your career is to go and meet other practitioners in the functional medicine space, connect with them, DM them, say, I'd love a hop on the phone with you for 15 minutes. Maybe not all of them will reply, but one person will, and you'll get more ideas as to what path you could take before you go and spend a bunch of money on a certification or a course or go developing a big fancy website, which may not necessarily do anything for you. So connect with other people in the space. This goes for health coaches, practitioners, anybody that's looking to dive into the world of functional medicine. Diane, a really great question. I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Going
so
back
much.
To your parents, my heart goes out to you. You know, awful. You're doing God's work out there, being for them and supporting them. And it's tough. And I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. You're the best. I love your voice. And I always go on Instagram after whenever you interview somebody and then I join their Instagram. So it's awesome.
Oh, that's you're awesome. Thank
you're
you for
I love your voice. Your please don't ever stop doing this.
Appreciate it. Thank
you're
you so much.
Such charisma.
Thank you, Diane.
All right.
Awesome. Wish you a beautiful day.
All right. You too.
All right, Patrick. Let's jump into the next person. I think there's a couple comments that came in. I'll just answer them real quick. Do you eat eggs? This is from Robert on YouTube. Do you eat eggs? Weight loss seems easier if one has eggs every day. I do eat eggs, not every day. And but I think eggs are extremely healthy. I know there are individuals in the vegan community. If you look at the documentaries Game Changers and Forks Over Knives, they say that eggs are as bad as cigarettes and the saturated fat and everything. And what I tend to look at is there's a friend of mine. His name is Anahad O'Connor. He's a writer for the New York Times. He has a great article called, I don't remember the exact name, but it's on modern day hunter-gatherer societies and what they ate. And what we can see from these modern day hunter-gatherer societies who really haven't changed their diet since their tribes have been around, you know, you're talking about some groups, and I've went to Africa, to Kenya, where I was born, and I've went and visited some of these groups. I went and spent time with the with the Samburu tribe as a trip that Summit Series, an organization that I'm part of, organized. And this particular group doesn't eat eggs, but the point that I was making is these modern day hunter-gatherer societies who have been around for a really long time, most of them eat eggs, and they have been eating eggs for a long period of time. If you do eat eggs in the US, I highly, highly, highly recommend you get pasture raised. These are eggs from chickens who are raised on pastures, which means grass. So a good chunk of their diet is insects, really insects that they're eating, worms, flies, other stuff, insects, ants, whatever. I don't know what chickens eat. And that is going to change the chemical makeup of an egg, and it's going to make it a lot more in line with how eggs should be eaten. The challenge with a lot of organic eggs, even organic eggs that are not pasture raised, and Vital Farms is a great company, shout out to them, pretty much in all Whole Foods that are out there, even sometimes Ralph's and other places carry them. If they're not pasture raised, and let's say even they're organic eggs, that means they're fed with organic corn. Primarily is a bulk of their diet. Sometimes in some cases, soy. You will see some eggs that say soy free, which means that they're feeding them organic corn. We have too much corn in our diet already. Even if you eat a really healthy diet. We have too much corn in our diet as a whole. And if you're eating eggs from chickens that are primarily fed in corn, they're not going to be filled with as much of the good makeup of, let's say, the omega-6, omega-3 ratio, more in omega-3s that we want than other eggs that are out there. All right, take a couple more questions. And I think that might be it. AC, 23 people in Norway have died from the vaccine. Yes, that was reported today. But again, we don't want to do fear mongering. We want to look at these. We want to be balanced with our approach. We want to get information that's out there. We have to also understand there was a doctor. This was pretty well known. You know, the New York Post wrote about this and a bunch of other magazines. There was a doctor from Florida. I'm blanking on his name, who his wife went on Instagram. And after he had the vaccine, he had a lot of complications that came up. And then within a short period of time, he was admitted to the ICU. And the thing is about, you will always hear anecdotal stories the more population gets vaccinated. There's a really great post from that Vinay Prasad retweeted on Twitter. I'll see if I can find it and link to it. But it basically gave you the stats of the normal amount of people in a year that die from different types of diseases. Well, if we continue to vaccinate a larger part of the population, naturally, somebody who is already going to die from heart disease or cancer or something else, it's likely that they might get the vaccine and die anyway. And you want to make sure that you don't do causation on something that was correlation. And along with that, it is alarming that Norway, as a country, came out and said that they strongly feel that these 23, 24 folks is more linked to the vaccine. We got that just came out, has to be investigated, has to be looked at. That's part of good medicine. We don't want to hype up the bad. We don't want to hype up the good. We want to look at things objectively. And that's what's going to happen with any kind of new technology that we bring out there. And I'm hoping that happens with the coronavirus vaccines as a whole. Seems that we have one other person here, Lisa, but I don't know if she has a question. So I'll take two more YouTube questions and we'll go ahead and wrap up since we're right about the hour mark that is there. We have Andy from YouTube that says, what are your top five recommendations for battling brain fog? Wow, it's a great question, Andy. Brain fog has a lot to do with your diet. If you listen to the experts, neuroscientists, and functional medicine doctors that have been on our podcast, I'll synthesize their information that's been there. A huge part of brain fog is not having proper metabolic health. So constantly spiking your blood sugar throughout the day, and now all of a sudden your blood sugar is spiked because you eat a diet that is high sugar. Let's say you have a traditional high sugar breakfast. You have coffee with a bunch of sugar inside of it, or you get a latte from Starbucks with a bunch of sugar inside of it. Then you have oatmeal with a bunch of sugar, brown sugar, and fruits inside of it. Then you have orange juice. If you're eating that typical American diet, or let's say you have a bunch of carbs from bagels, you know, refined carbs that are there, your blood sugar is going to spike up. Then you end up getting a crash because you don't have healthy fats and proteins. You know, this is pretty well documented, and you can wear a continuous glucose monitor to also see this in you. And when your blood sugar crashes, now all of a sudden you don't have the mental energy and you're not getting the energy source supply to your brain that typically would come from slower burning calories that would come from fat and protein. So now all of a sudden you are not going to have the mental alertness, awareness. And we've all seen this firsthand. You get hangry, all of a sudden you can't focus, you become more irritable. We just talked about this with nutritionist Sean Stevenson on last week's podcast about why does hangry happen and how does it related to blood sugar. The other thing long-term is that those healthy fats, especially omega-3s, are going to play a big role in making sure that you have the brain power that's there. Not having enough water and drinking too much caffeine is another component. That's a really easy component. Andrew Huberman, who's from the Huberman Lab at Stanford, came on the podcast and talked about how just simply having more water is something that helps people prevent brain fog. And then exercise. We know exercise. We did an episode with Ryan Glatt on the podcast. He's a brain coach and fitness expert who's currently pursuing his master's or PhD. And he laid out all the scientific evidence that's out there for how exercise helps you have better brain health and allows better blood flow. And specifically, we went into BDNF being a Miracle-Gro for our brain-derived nootropic factors and how important it is for our overall brain health. So check out that episode. If you haven't seen it, you can find some more information on that. All right. Looks like we have one more guest back. Is this Heli?
Hi, Drew.
Hey, what's up, brother? How are you?
Sorry about that. I was not expecting you to be chosen, but anyway.
You got chosen, brother. You got chosen. And you're our final question to wrap things up.
Yeah, so I'm speaking from Toronto here in Canada.
Shout out to the 416.
Right. And then, so the number of cases of COVID cases are coming up in the city. And I would say that every 3 or 4 weeks, they are coming up with new measures. And I'm not going into this merit if it's right or wrong, but they're strengthening the health and safety measures. And this is kind of taking a toll on everyone. Everybody's tired. And it's winter. I'm so glad it's a warm winter. It's in the 30s right now. So it's not that bad, and I've been exercising, but I think it's not working so much. And this is going to be going on for a couple months because the vaccine rollout, it has been very slow. We're going to be vaccinated. We have the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine as well. So I think that's how do you survive? How do you weather through all this next maybe 2 or 3 months until the vaccine is widely available?
Yeah. So the first thing is it's tough. And I've been in Toronto in the winter. I used to have an apartment there and I've spent winters up there. I know they're tough. And I lived on the East Coast for a while. So those gray skies really do, get you feeling blue. The first thing that I want to say, because there's a layered response to your question. There's a lot of data that even going outside when it's not sunny significantly can help regulate mood and set your circadian rhythm, even when it's cloudy outside and even looking in the direction of the sun. It doesn't feel enjoyable to go outside when the skies are gray and it's cold, but there's a lot of data that's out there showing that the number of lumens that are still coming from the sun and is significant enough that it still plays a role and can help with seasonal affective disorder. So that's an important thing. So make sure first thing in the morning, if you can, even for like 5, 10, 15 minutes, just go outside and, sit and look in the direction of the sun or go out to a park and walk a little bit, if you can. The second thing is, we know that a huge percentage of the population is vitamin D deficient. So the next time, I know healthcare in Canada is great and you guys have universal healthcare, but when it comes to getting certain types of tests, you kind of have to push a little bit more. But getting vitamin D test is pretty cost effective. So the next time you go to your doctor, or if you can send in a request, if you don't already know your vitamin D levels, double check your vitamin D, because being low in vitamin D, which a huge percentage of the population is, even in California where I live, 80% of the population is deficient in vitamin D. Wait, so severely deficient, I think it's like 30 or 40%, but not optimal is almost 80 to 90% based on a lot of the functional medicine doctors that we have here and what they see people coming into their clinic. So double check your vitamin D levels, because optimally, and Dr. Rhonda Patrick, PhD, she's been on a bunch of podcasts before. She has really great recommendations of how you can quickly and easily get your vitamin D levels up with supplementation. I think in Canada, your regular doctor has to technically prescribe it, but you can get it over the counter in a lot of places. So she has recommendations that we can link in the show notes of what you should supplement. But the optimal range seems to be about getting into the level of somewhere between 40 and 60 on your vitamin D test that's there. That alone can significantly play an impact on the blues. Now, there's another component, which is, I think between how slow the vaccine is coming out, you're starting to see a little bit of shift in tides. Just the other day, Andrew Cuomo, who is the governor of New York, finally started to come out and change a little bit of his tune. He posted on Twitter, and I'll read his quote. I brought it up. He said, "We simply cannot stay closed until the vaccine hits critical mass. The cost is too high. We have nothing left to open. We must reopen the economy, but do it smartly and safely." Because of how slow the vaccine rollout is, I think you're going to start seeing a lot of governors, especially the ones who have traditionally been very heavy on lockdowns, which is definitely Gavin Newsom, who is the governor of the state of California, Andrew Cuomo, compared to, let's say, like the governors of Florida and Texas and other places. They're starting to realize if we don't back off a little bit with some of these crazy restrictions, there is really, if you look at the evidence, there is really no evidence of outdoor transmission of coronavirus if you are not in close quarters. So why are we not opening up the parks, right? Yeah, be smart, have masks that are on, but there's really no evidence of outdoor transmission. And there's a lot of clinical trials that have come out about China. So I'm hoping that the governors of these states start to wake up a little bit and realize that we are losing so much with these super strict lockdowns, and there's a way to do it safer. You're starting to see the tide shift a little bit, primarily because they know that it could be until the end of next year before they can vaccinate everyone. And if they wait till then, they're going to destroy the economy, and so many more people are going to be unemployed, which is going to raise the suicide rates. Kids are not going to be able to go back to school, which is going to have all sorts of other challenges that are there. So fight for you. And that means if you have grievances, it's okay to make it known. Like, hey, look, we have to weigh the pros and cons of these lockdowns. It's not popular and people want to criticize you if you question anything, but I do think it's important to speak up. There's a lot of people that feel the way that you do. Go outside, check your vitamin D levels, and connect with community. We need to make sure that we connect with community, and whether it's Zoom or seeing people at a distance, you know, our nervous system, our vagal nerve knows that we are safe when other people are around. We were not designed to be in isolation for long periods of time. Do you live alone right now, or do you live with
someone?
Yeah,
I live alone. That's one of the issues, right? So,
if you live
and then
alone,
there are restrictions in terms of other households you can be in contact with. So that's something that, I mean, you have to, in the beginning, they said we have to have your own bubble. And right now, you just have to be in contact. You can be in contact with one household if you live by yourself. But if you're a family, they are not recommending to be in contact at all.
And, so, and how widely available is testing out there in Toronto? Can you get tested pretty easily for COVID through like the PCR testing and stuff?
Yeah, you can get the testing. I personally never went through the process, but I understand it's pretty standard. It's not, I think you have to book an appointment and then you go to the clinic and you get
tested. I'm going to give you some advice with a grain of salt that probably could get me in trouble. But listen, I mean, you've seen all these, even the people who are in charge of public policy. And I know there was some controversy that happened in Canada where you have, you know, heads of state over there of the provinces that got caught being in the Caribbeans or being in other places.
Right. Right.
These guys even know who are making the policy that you can't stay cooped up all the time. You need to see human beings. You need fresh air. You need to travel a little bit. You need to do stuff. I think you can do it in a smart way. If I were you, again, this is my own opinion, right? Probably get me in trouble. I might get a small group of people together, you know, get tested, be smart, have a little bit of a bigger bubble, and I just break the rules and I'd get together with them. I am not going to let the total restrictions, you know, sacrifice my mental health. If you have other friends that are also healthy, you can get tested. You could do it in a smart way. I think that you
my
can.
My friends traveled abroad.
Okay, they traveled abroad. So
they traveled abroad. they saw the trouble coming. They said, "We're gonna go to somewhere else."
So you know, Zoom, anything else, brother, that you can do to connect with people makes a difference. You know, this is the time to really invest in our mental health. I think we'll look back 10 years from now and see the toll that we took. And the good thing that will come out of all this is this will be a good lesson that we maybe. Maybe these super strict lockdowns don't actually work the way that they were intended. I believe they were people that had the best intentions that were trying. I don't think it's a conspiracy to try to lock down the government and take control of the economy. There are people that are in the health world that believe that. I don't believe that. But I think we'll look back and we'll say that we went a little overboard. We need to be smart about it moving forward. So do whatever you got to do, brother, to invest in your mental health. It's super, super key.
Great. Yeah, that's great. Answer. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Absolutely. Thank you, my friend. And I wish you all the best. Ladies and gentlemen, Thank you guys so much for showing up for our first Ask Me Anything podcast series we did. I hope it was useful. I hope it was helpful. Just remember, I am an entrepreneur and I have a lot of expertise in being an entrepreneur. When it comes to the world of health, just for everybody who's out there listening, because sometimes I get text messages to say, hey, Dr. Drew, I have a question for you. Now, I don't know if it's because I'm Indian and people just assume that Indian people are doctors, or maybe it's the way that I talk with the level of knowledge on, you know, studies and some of the topics that our guests are growing through, where people feel like, wow, you know as much as a doctor, but I'm not a doctor. I'm not even a nutritionist. I don't have a degree in this field of wellness and medicine that's out there. I'm passionate. I try to connect the dots. I try to ask good questions, and I try to invite the experts on my podcast who I can ask and get the clarity from them. People that are leading the way and paving the way, especially when it comes to neuroplasticity, brain health, functional medicine, longevity. And do your research. Don't just listen to me or any other podcast host that's out there, but it's okay to question things in a smart way and weigh the pros and cons and look into stuff, whether that's dietary, whether that's anything related to the COVID approach and lockdowns and vaccines, or any other aspect that's out there. It's okay to do your own homework and actually do research. We'll provide a bunch of show notes that are out there for some interesting people that I look up to, and you can go and read some of the articles that they've put out there. Stay healthy, stay happy. I want to give a big shout out to Patrick and Alex from our team, who are the two individuals. Patrick, Alex, can you pop on for a quick second here? Love to give you a shout out on the YouTube. Alex, I don't know if you thought you were going to be on video, but a quick shout out to Patrick, quick shout out to Alex. Don't worry, Alex, you don't have to hop on video if you don't want to. For they're the editors of the podcast. They also do a lot of social media. Thank you guys for making this happen, and we will see you in the future. Bye-bye, everyone.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search there, find a provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.